Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am riding solo, as I do for every Monday show, so that I can hop into the iTunes reviews and answer your guys' questions. And we got a bunch of them. Thank you, guys. You guys are really, I like to say this on Twitter all the time, but y'all remain the bestest. You guys are really, really good. You had some really good thought-provoking questions. I really appreciated the one about how I watch games. I'll definitely get to that one. There's an MCU question in there. I actually put together a list to respond to that one. And as always, there are Laker questions as well. There's a Durant question. There's a LeBron question. And there's some role player questions as well. Brandon Ingram. There's some really fun stuff that I'm going to get to on today's show. So I may as well just hop into it and get to it, right? You guys know where to find the show. Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Silver Screen and Roll. You can find it on Lakers Outsiders. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. And as always, if you want something, if you want me to talk about something, leave it in a 5-star review on iTunes and I will get to it. I'm hitting a pretty high percentage on this stuff at this point. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the Lakers-specific stuff first because I know that's what you guys are here for anyway, and then I'll broaden the scope out. There's a question about the Warriors and why they're so good in the third quarter. There's some stuff about, obviously, like I said, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and there's some all kinds of stuff in here. So I'm going to start with this question. It's about Brandon Ingram. And it is from, here we go, yep, Sammy V EPT. Sammy, if you're from El Paso, you're a freaking hero. My family is all in El Paso. Chuco for life. the question, though, is year three going to be boom or bust for Brandon Ingram? All right. Yes and no. Yes, in the standpoint of like if a couple superstars show up and he doesn't and he can't quite keep up with those superstars, then the Lakers probably need to find a place for him or find some kind of return for him for immediate help that those kinds of names, Paul George, LeBron, Durant, whichever superstar that you're talking about or that you're thinking about, if he can't quite keep up with those guys, then it's time to probably move him. No, in the standpoint of he's still going to be a really young third-year player in the NBA. I mean, he still right now cannot drink legally. And I say that as somebody who is currently holding a glass of wine. Yes, I think it's important for him. And year three is usually when you really start to see the player that somebody is capable of becoming. That's why Julius Randle's season this past year was so exciting because it was like, wow, this guy can be special. This guy can fill this role that is one of the more valuable roles across the NBA. And so if we start seeing that same kind of thing from Brandon Ingram, well, now you're talking about a player who you can legitimately build around. And now me personally, I was way wrong on him coming into his second season. I'm still going to kind of mitigate against getting those expectations too high at this point. But if he can be a secondary creator, if he can get his shot over anybody, as it looks like he can, especially from mid-range, if he can really utilize his length in the ways that he was as the season went along last year, you're talking about a superstar wing player. Right. And so I think it's still as year three approaches and as we watch that actually take place, that's when we'll really start seeing what this guy is really capable of. And if the Lakers don't get anybody, you know, if Paul George doesn't sign or if LeBron or, you know, KD stays, whatever the situation might be, their problems will be bigger than just Brandon Ingram because this plan that they've put in place since the D'Angelo Russell trade didn't come to fruition in the ways that they probably wanted it to. But if those guys don't come, Ingram gets a little bit more rope, I guess. He gets a little bit more leeway to fully develop. And it'll be all the more important, though, that he does, because the Lakers really won't have much else going on other than their young core. And there are pieces in the young core who are obviously very exciting, Ingram being one of them. But he needs to, I think, this next year, take another considerable step forward in his development, regardless of situation, but especially if the superstars come over. I'm going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I will talk about, you know, another situation that is actually a really good segue here, where the Lakers could, you know, obviously would prefer to sign a couple superstars, but if they don't, then what? So this question comes from Saul the Kid. The Lakers want two max stars, but if they go out and get one max star, say Paul George, and then sign two really good role players, how would that look, kind of thing? And all right, so here's the thing. That's always going to be an option, especially on this market. There's going to be a ton of value out there. So I don't see a scenario where the Lakers strike out completely. That said, getting those two superstars is absolutely vital, obviously for the reasons of you want really good basketball players if you're playing in a basketball league. But the other thing, too, is if the Lakers do sign a couple superstars, well, now better veterans will come over at a lower discount, right, or at a lower rate, and you get even better value out there. So, yes, the Lakers could go with Paul George, and the names listed here are Trevor Ariza, J.J. Redick, Rudy Gay, Fred Van Vliet. Those names would be fine. But those types of players will come over for cheaper if the Lakers have multiple superstars, because players want to win rings. It's a huge earning bonus that if somebody comes over here, wins a ring, or, you know, is a key factor in a playoff series or multiple playoff series, they see a bump in salary. Just look at all of the role players who played for the Lakers during their title seasons, and they all got overpaid after their time in Los Angeles. And so those types of names, the Arizas, the Reddicks, the et ceteras, like those guys are going to come over because they want to play with, say, you know, if LeBron is an option, as Pete seems to really think that LeBron is an option, well, the people will go out of their way to play for less for him. And those are, that's why it's so, I'm just another one of the reasons why it's so important that the Lakers land the superstars that they have been connected to during this entire process. Speaking of superstars, The next couple questions, there's one from ThenL33, fan and friend of the show. There's also another question here about LeBron, and it's basically, so the LeBron question is, all right, compare the theory and why Durant would want to come to the Lakers to why LeBron would come to the Lakers. Basically, it's asking me to make the case to LeBron why the Lakers make sense or why he would leave Cleveland. It's fairly simple here with LeBron. Jordan Clarkson, Tristan Thompson, Kyle Korver, who is still valuable, and J.R. Smith are making a combined almost $100 million next season. And we're just seeing it right now. I hate watching these Cavs. I hate them so much. It's like watching the Bucks. I lean too far in this direction, but I love good basketball. That's really all would I prefer that great basketball is played for my Lakers? Absolutely. But I love watching good basketball wherever I can see it. And LeBron, to me, is the best player I have ever seen because of the way he can just kind of mold an entire game and make it work for him. And I'm watching these Cavs play, and you're seeing open look after open look after open look, and clank after clank after clank after clank. And yes, he played a part in overpaying J.R. Smith and overpaying Tristan Thompson and some of the other role players that they have on their team. But at the end of the day, that's still the roster that he's kind of stuck with. And I want to see him at some point during Golden State's run be able to challenge Golden State with not such a huge deficit in talent to make up for it. And so if I'm the Lakers, I say, look, we have these young players who are all capable of growing into the type of roles that you need to be successful in the NBA. Lonzo Ball, like there was a mix I saw tweeted out there of all of his blocks that took place last season. I think it was like 43 of them in total. And his ability to switch, his instincts and help, like those things are so vital to beating the Golden State Warriors, because you need to be able to defend to have a chance against those guys. Now, he also needs to be able to shoot, but that's at least the beginnings of the type of player that you need to beat the Warriors, right? You can keep on going on down the line. Julius Randle's ability to switch and also punish people inside. Like, that's something that Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson can show to LeBron and say, look, this is the type of player you need for that type of situation. Kyle Kuzma, same thing. Brandon Ingram, same thing to even in a higher degree. Our wings who can slide up to the three or down to the four. Ingram still needs to see if he can slide down to the four, but he can slide up to the point, and he can hand some of the creative duties whenever LeBron doesn't have the ball. The other thing, too, with what's going on in Cleveland is, and this is no secret, he can't stand Dan Gilbert. And that was the big quote from last week, was that he had, you know, he talked about how, you know, he was asked if Dan Gilbert would sway him one way or the other. And he said he could have just said, look, I'm going to handle my business how I'm going to handle my business. No, he made it known that he really wants to. He and Dan Gilbert don't get along. And if there's anything that the Buss family has shown over the entirety of their organizational history, it's that they get along with superstar players. Hell, Jeannie Buss aligns politically more closely with LeBron. And I'm not saying that any one of these things are going to be a determining factor, but they sure as hell help in the meeting there with LeBron. So the case to be made to LeBron really isn't that hard to make. It's just, it has everything to do with you know what you have out here in Cleveland. Here's everything that we have to offer out here in LA on top of not having to live in Cleveland. That's kind of important. And then I'm going to get to the Durant question here too, really quickly before we go to break. Basically the question is if the Lakers have Paul George, would I rather have KD, LeBron, or Kawhi? And then a secondary question to that is, if Kyrie was healthy, do I think the Cavs beat the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals? To that second question, no. I think Kyrie is a pretty huge difference maker, and Terry Rozier was a fun story and all that stuff, but Kyrie is legit superstar status. And now to answer the question about Paul George and who is the ideal fit with Paul George, I think the ideal fit with Paul George is LeBron. And it's because LeBron is capable of doing all the creative stuff for not just himself, obviously, but for teammates. And Paul George is one of the better off-ball offensive players across the NBA. So, shocker here in saying that LeBron makes the most sense for somebody and because of how good LeBron is. But that's who I would pair with George. But any of those, whether it's KD, LeBron, or Kawhi, like that's how you beat the Warriors, is you have multiple wings who can switch up and down the lineup. And if you have Paul George plus Lonzo plus any of those other elite wings, whether it's KD, LeBron, or Kawhi, and Kuzma or Randle or Ingram wind up working out, that's how you're going to beat the Warriors. And that's where it'd be really intriguing to see this all take place. And like, not just from a fan standpoint, being somebody who roots for the Lakers, but from a basketball standpoint, I want to see that matchup take place. I want to see if the Lakers, if those guys were to come to the Lakers, how well they would fare in a series against Golden State. Golden State looks vulnerable, and that team would be super, super interesting to see take on these Warriors as they kind of, I think they're going to start kind of coming down from this dynasty. I think they're going to win this title, but next year is very much open for the taking, whether it's for Houston or wherever LeBron goes. I think Golden State can be beat in a series. We're starting to see that. You know, even as we just watched them. I'm recording this late Saturday or Monday morning, basically, but I want to see these Golden State Warriors really pushed and really challenged to see how they handle that adversity. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to answer some of the other questions here as we kind of broaden our scope. I'll be right back in a second. All right, so the next question has to do with the Warriors and why they're so good and why they're so dominant in the third quarter. And here's the thing. So this is from Clutch Hutch on iTunes, and they're asking, why are the Warriors so good in third quarters? And here's where I would start. To me, you really see coaching and quality and caliber of coaching in the first and third quarters, because that's when the players have just finished hearing a lengthy speech and game plan from the coach. When you get into the second and fourth questions, it's almost a war of attrition. Who can stick more closely to the game plan that their coach put together and win a game? But in the first and third quarters, third quarter especially, so the first quarter, you've put your game plan together. This is coming from a coach. You put your game plan together. You put your team out there with a game plan that you think is going to be most effective against that team. And you see it take place over the course of a first half of basketball. Then you come into halftime, and now it's time to make adjustments. What do we have to do? What do I have to tweak from the game plan? Do we have to stick more closely to the game plan? Did I make a terrible game plan, and it's time to rethink things from carte blanche? Those are things that you figure out at halftime. And this isn't to say that I think Steve Kerr is this god of coaching, but I do think it means something. It says something about Golden State's coaching staff that they are so effective in third quarters. And the other thing, too, with third quarters, and really with any kind of momentum stat, is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where the Warriors at this point, and this is where I was kind of bummed that the game got away from Cleveland the way it did yesterday, but when a team knows that they have you, whether you're an individual matchup or whatever, but it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where they step onto the court in the third quarter and they're saying, I got these guys. We got these guys. And that's why it was kind of a bummer yesterday, because the Cavs actually played fairly evenly through the third quarter. And I really wanted to see how the Warriors would respond to that mortality, for lack of a better term. And now we did see them. They responded by kicking ass in the fourth quarter, and they didn't make it a game. And so that in and of itself speaks to how good that team is. But in the third quarter, to me, it really says a lot about coaching, communication, ability to adjust, and those are the things that the Warriors have really figured out in a major way. Let's go to the next question here. From Vujicic fan, really liked the show. They were nervous about what it was going to be like after Harrison. Thank you for the kind words there. They asked me, as a podcaster / blogger, do you watch the game differently than an average diehard fan? Like, do you think about what you're going to say about the game later or as you're watching it? Or do you just watch and enjoy thinking about your comments later? I would say it's closer to the latter. Honestly, look, what I bring to the table here, and this has been something that I have I've done this on purpose. I've always thought objectivity was a stupid goal. I thought it was always an impossible goal. So objectivity, now yes, I don't want to be a homer. I don't want to put off fans of other teams with my fandom, but this idea that you are at all times objective about something as subjective as sports are, like, that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I think that in large part is why journalism is kind of fading from sports, why it's kind of struggling a little bit. There are a ton of other factors. I'm not, that's not me casting aspersions on an entire industry. I just think, like, there's a reason Bill Simmons is as popular as he is, and it's because, yes, he is a Celtics fan. Yes, he is a Boston sports fan. But he can be a fan, and he represents the sports fan's voice, but he's also realistic about the team he's talking about. And so when I watch a game, I try to watch it as a fan. I open up a beer, I watch it from my living room. I'm a huge proponent of rewinding. I don't care. I don't need to watch it from live at all times. I live tweet. A huge reason why I tweet so much during games is, like, that can kind of wind up being my notes after I look at the game. I kind of quickly go through my timeline to see not just which opinions I had during the game, but which opinions were also shared during the game by those who follow me on Twitter. And with that information, I really quickly I put my thoughts together, I fully contextualize them, and I go from there. And it seemed to work to this point. Now, everybody else has different processes. Pete responded, I really liked this question, so I fired off a tweet to ask other people who cover this league how they do this stuff. And Pete has a different way that he does it. I mean, he watches games, each game, up to 3 times or so, right? And now I don't go that far. Maybe I should. And maybe it's something I might do now that, you know, this can be a full-time career. But for Laker games, I feel like there's a huge thing to be gotten from the immediate gut reaction that you get from a game, so long as you remain realistic and understand the biases that I have going into the game and in my response to a game. If you have a different process, let me know. Shout me out on Twitter. Let me know how you guys watch your games. It's a really interesting question. It really, really is. So thank you for that, VHS fan. Last question here. This is from Dion Martin. Hey, Anthony, as always, love the show. Off-topic question this week. What are your favorite or top 5 MCU movies? His are Thor, Ragnarok, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Avengers Infinity War, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is kind of a hot take. I would agree that he thinks it's a hot take. And then the first Avengers. So this, I'm not really a fan of, like, listing things, because you ask me on a Wednesday and this list might change. So in no order, I think Iron Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther, the first Captain America, and Spider-Man Homecoming are my favorite, my favorite 5 movies there. Iron Man, I really enjoy, and look, if Iron Man wasn't as successful as it was, we don't have this entire universe, this cinematic universe. So I think it deserves credit for that. The first Guardians of the Galaxy took a group of characters that nobody really had heard from or heard about, and made them among the more popular characters in all of cinema. I think that's quite the accomplishment there. Black Panther had to be special, and was. To me, I think if I had a gun to my head, I think I would say that's probably my favorite Marvel movie ever. It does have its holes, just like every other movie does in this type of genre. But I freaking loved Black Panther. For everything about it was so cool to me. Like, I love that Black Panther has its own look. Like, the purples and the teals and the deep blues, like, it's just a beautiful movie, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. Captain America 1, like, it really made you feel the pain of Captain America, which has done a ton to offer the lens by which this MCU has kind of taken place. And I thought it did a really, really, really good job of making you feel the pain of that Captain America feels in not being able to be with the one that he loved, and that's painted his entire worldview from moving forward. And I thought that was incredible. And then Spider-Man Homecoming was just fun. It was just like a really, really fun movie. And Thor Ragnarok kind of fits into this class of movies as well, and they've kind of realized, guys, it's a Superman movie, it's a superhero movie, let's have fun with it, we can laugh during these things. And I wish the DC universe would figure this out as well. And for whatever reason, Superman is this mopey little loser, kind of, and he's just, and he's not that, like, in that's not the Superman I really like. I like kind of the innocent banter that he has with Lois Lane, and we just don't get enough of that. And Batman, I know he's like the kind of Byronic character. He's like he's the representation of a sulky hero who is almost anti-hero because of his sentimentalities, but he also is like, he's a genius. So you would think that he would have a level of understanding and comedy to back up his abilities as a detective, right? And I just wish that the DC universe, Zack Snyder, I think you suck. I wish that he would just, that they would realize, hey, these guys can be funny. It doesn't have to be forced, but these guys can be funny. That was one of the things. I'm really interested to see how Aquaman takes place, because I think he brings that kind of levity that is really necessary in those movies just to make them fun. Like DC movies, you go there and you feel like you're beaten over the top of the head with allegory for the whole 90 minutes to 2 hour kind of your time in those theaters. Captain America and Iron Man's back and forth, where they very openly hate and love each other. It makes for a really fun time at the movie theater, and really that's the entire point of these movies, is to go there, get away from reality for a little bit, and have fun in a theater. And that's been my favorite aspect of Spider-Man, Ant-Man, Thor Ragnarok. Like those movies have figured out humor in that universe, and I think they really deserve a ton of credit for that. Let me know what your top five movies are, your top five MCU movies are. As always, I love getting your thoughts on Twitter. I am at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow the show at Locked On Lakers. You can find the show everywhere that you find podcasts. Shouts to that one guy who was a little bummed that I didn't go through the entire intro. I went back and I did the entire intro for you, buddy. Tomorrow's show, I'll figure out, I'll bring on a guest, and I'll find something to talk about, find something fun to talk about. Thank you again a ton. I cannot thank you enough for those of you who are leaving questions. The list gets longer every freaking week, so I really, really appreciate that. That helps me keep the lights on. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your day.